What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hello, campus cronies. Welcome back to Campus Crime Chronicles. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Turner, higher education professional and true crime addict. In every episode of this podcast, I take a deep dive into some sort of true crime that occurred on a school campus or a crime that's associated with a college or university in some way. For each episode, I rate the seriousness of the crime from 1 to 5 on my serious crime scale, with 1 being completely not serious, possibly even a little humorous from time to time, to 5 being extremely serious. This episode is rated a 5. As we begin, I want you to picture this. A fight breaks out on the campus of Kentucky State University. One particular college student is in danger, so his father shows up to protect him. But what begins as protection quickly escalates into gunfire. By the end of the night, one student is dead and another is critically injured. Then, in a twist of fate that defies almost every expectation of justice, the man who pulled the trigger walks free, while the father of the deceased student is the one who ends up behind bars. This is a case that forces us to ask uncomfortable questions about self-defense, accountability, and how the justice system decides who is allowed to claim fear and who pays the ultimate price for it. This episode is titled Deadly Protection. So without further ado, let's get started. On December 9th, 2025, 48-year-old Jacob Bard and his wife traveled over 150 miles from Evansville, Indiana, to Kentucky State University. Kentucky State, or KSU, is a public historically black college and university, or HBCU, which is located in Kentucky's capital city of Frankfort and has about 2,200 students. Now, the Bards weren't headed to campus for a tour or specific event, and they weren't there to simply help their sons pack up for winter break. They were there because they no longer believed their children were safe at KSU. Now, just a quick side note, some of the research says that he had two sons attending KSU, but other news articles just refer to one son. From what I gather, he does have two sons. They were both attending KSU, but this particular case is just about the younger one. So, side note as we move on. Now, you see, weeks earlier, in October 2025, Bard's younger son had reported a burglary in his dorm room to campus police. According to NBC News, after reporting the burglary, he allegedly began receiving violent threats. The family said those threats, combined with what they described as quote-unquote multiple armed and violent incidents on or near campus, made remaining at Kentucky State feel impossible. And this concern wasn't abstract, because according to NPR, just 4 months earlier, on August 17th, 2025, someone who was not a student fired multiple shots from a vehicle near the same residence hall at KSU, where at least one of Bard's sons lived. In that shooting, two non-students were struck, one of whom sustained serious injuries, but both survived. However, in the shooting, the dorm itself and at least one vehicle were damaged by the gunfire as well. And for many families, that incident in August never fully faded away. For the Bard family, it confirmed something that they could no longer rationalize away. So they made the decision to withdraw both of their sons from the university. And on December 9th, they returned to KSU with police escort to remove their sons' belongings. Before entering this particular residence hall, the Bard family met with campus security to discuss their safety concerns. And because of the seriousness of the situation, they were escorted by two armed campus police officers. Essentially, this wasn't a casual or impulsive situation. Rather, it was meant to be controlled. But as the family and one officer approached the entrance of the Whitney M. Young Jr. Residence Hall, a large group suddenly rushed toward them. Witnesses estimated the group had a total of 20 to 30 individuals, many of whom wore ski masks and hoods. One was carrying a baseball bat, and several were later identified as not even KSU students at all. And so I'm very confused as to where these people came from, and research doesn't really tell us, like, what started it or what is really happening on this campus. But anyway, what followed was fast and violent. According to reporting from WKYT in Lexington, the altercation spilled outside and the group violently began assaulting the Bard family and others nearby. One of Bard's sons was knocked to the ground. Multiple people piled on top of him and his head was slammed against the pavement. Jacob tried to pull the attackers off his son, but he couldn't. Jonathan Danks, Bard's attorney, later described the scene in stark terms, saying, quote, "Multiple people were on top of him, beating his head to the concrete with fists and feet. He's unable to pull the individuals off of his son. And seeing his son in imminent risk of death and serious injury, he did what any parent would have done in that moment," end quote. And in that moment, believing his son, his wife, and himself were facing imminent serious harm, Jacob Bard pulled out a firearm and fired. Two students were struck. One survived, critically injured but stable, and he has never been publicly identified. But the other was 19-year-old Dejon Darrell Fox Jr. of Indianapolis. And tragically, he died. According to WDRB in Louisville, after the shots were fired, Bard was on his knees with his hands in the air when another individual approached and kicked him in the head. That person was later restrained by campus police. Frankfort police were called to the scene also at approximately 3:10 p.m. Those officers arrived within minutes, and Jacob Bard was arrested and taken to the Franklin County Regional Jail. He was immediately charged with murder and first-degree assault. At his arraignment, though, he pleaded not guilty and a judge set his bond at $1 million, double the $500,000 that the prosecution had asked for. According to NPR, Kentucky State University immediately canceled classes and finals and all campus activities for the remainder of the week. University President Kofi C. Akpo addressed the community shortly afterward, saying, quote, "We're mourning the loss of our students. As a parent, I cannot imagine receiving the call I placed today to the parents," end quote. The next day, on December 10th, 2025, the Frankfort Police Department held a press conference. According to LiveNow Fox, Assistant Police Chief Scott Tracy attempted to de-escalate the situation, saying, quote, "We want to reassure the community that this was an isolated incident involving these specific individuals, and there are no active safety concerns on the campus of Kentucky State University at this time," end quote. Tracy emphasized that the investigation was ongoing and involved multiple agencies, including Kentucky State Police, the Franklin County Sheriff's Office, and KSU Police. He also made a public appeal and said, quote, "We need to get as much detail as we can from anybody that was on scene. We know that there were a number of people recording different things. If they could bring that in and share it with us, it's imperative that we are able to see that," end quote. President Akpo echoed a commitment to safety, saying, quote, "The campus is a safe place for the students moving forward. We've added more police officers. The mayor, the judge, and I met to see how we can collaborate more, and we will continue that discussion once the investigation is completed," end quote. But for one family, safety had already come too late. According to ABC 36 News, KSU held a vigil for friends and family of Dejon Darrell Fox Jr. He was a sophomore business administration major, known on campus for his creativity, humor, kindness, and personal style. Only 19 years old, Dejon was originally from Indianapolis, where he attended and graduated from Victory College Prep High School. At the time of the shooting, he was days away from returning home to Indianapolis for winter break. His mother, Chardonnay Cleveland, tearfully recalled the moment she learned her son had been shot, heartbroken that she didn't get to see him one last time. She said, quote, "They say he died, I think, at 4:17. I think I got the call at 3:20. I never would have made it in time," end quote. She described Dejon as joyful, someone who made people laugh effortlessly. She said, quote, "All he do is make people laugh. I don't know too many people who dislike him. How could you dislike him? He gonna get on your nerves until you like him," end quote. According to reporting by Fox 59, Dejon was the first in his family to go to college right out of high school, and he knew Kentucky State was the right fit for him the moment he set foot on campus. His mother recalled, quote, "It was no turning back after that. He found his place," end quote. But that sense of belonging made the loss even heavier. Chardonnay described her grief simply with, "I just feel cold. One minute I'm okay. The next minute, I'm not." She recalled how she sent her son to college believing it would keep him safe. She explained, quote, "I feared for him being here because Indiana is crazy. I didn't think this was something I'd have to worry about while he's at school, on campus," end quote. Dejon's grandmother, Kimberly Cleveland, also spoke publicly. She struggled to understand how a 19-year-old boy could be killed by a 48-year-old man. Heartbreakingly, his mother said, quote, "It's just so hard that it was a grown man. You went to that school with the intention to hurt someone because if you didn't, you wouldn't have drove all the way from Evansville, Indiana to Kentucky with a firearm. You went up there looking to do something to somebody, and it happened to be my grandson. Now he's gone and we'll never see him again," end quote. Chardonnay lovingly called her son Wit-Wit, and just a week before his death, they had filmed some social media videos together, unaware it would be the last time she would physically hold her child. And she asked the public for one thing. She said, quote unquote, "Everybody loved him. Just don't forget about him." After Dejon's death, friends and family of Chardonnay started a GoFundMe campaign to raise money for funeral and burial expenses. On the campaign page, it reads, quote, "His parents are facing the kind of heartbreak no parent should ever have to endure, especially 2 weeks before Christmas." planning a funeral for their child, and navigating a future without them when tragedy hits without warning, even the strongest families need help carrying the weight. This GoFundMe has been created with the family's permission to support them through the immediate and unexpected financial burdens that come with losing a child. While emotions are high, we respectfully ask that the focus remain where it belongs, on Dejan Fox Jr., the funny, humble teenager that senselessly had his life taken away from him. End quote. Currently, the campaign has raised a little over $5,500 of the $10,000 goal, but it did reach the initial goal of $2,000. As of today's recording, it is still an active campaign that is still accepting donations.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
This podcast is supported by Midi Health. Are you in midlife, feeling dismissed, unheard, or just plain tired of the old healthcare system? You're not alone. In fact, even today, 75% of women seeking care for menopause and perimenopause issues are left entirely untreated. But it's time for a change. It's time for Midi. Midi's not just a healthcare provider. It's a women's telehealth clinic founded and supported by world-class leaders in women's health. Their clinicians provide one-on-one, face-to-face consultations where they truly listen to your unique needs. They offer a full range of holistic, data-driven solutions that isn't one-size-fits-all care. This is care uniquely tailored for you. At Midi, you'll find that their mission is clear: to help all women thrive in midlife, giving them access to the healthcare they deserve. Because they believe midlife isn't the middle at all. It is the beginning of your second act. Ready to feel your best and write your second act script? Visit joinmidi.com today to book your personalized insurance-covered virtual visit. That's joinmidi.com. Midi, the care women deserve.
By December 17th, 2025, the case was presented to a Franklin County grand jury. According to WKYT, jurors reviewed surveillance footage, witness accounts, and evidence collected by multiple law enforcement agencies. Bard's attorney, Jonathan Danks, was vocal throughout the process. He told reporters, quote, "As an attorney, it's really difficult to see somebody like Jacob go through this when you feel very strongly that what they did was lawful. But no matter if it's justified, what happened is tragic." End quote. Danks argued that KSU failed to adequately address ongoing violence involving Bard's sons and emphasize video evidence showing a mob attack. He stated plainly, quote, "Absolutely, his actions were justified. He was acting in self-defense, primarily of his son, but also his wife and himself," end quote. And under Kentucky law, deadly force may be used if a person reasonably believes there is an imminent threat of death or serious bodily harm. Danks further said, quote, "I'm sad on behalf of Jacob that he had to take that action. Nobody should be in that situation. I feel anger for him that he's being put through all of this, that he's had his character questioned, his motives questioned, and his actions questioned when he did what any parent would do for their kid in that situation," end quote. After approximately 3 hours of deliberation, the grand jury returned a no true bill. According to WLKY News, a true bill is not a declaration of innocence. Rather, it means that the grand jury just didn't find sufficient evidence to move forward with indicting Bard on the crimes he was charged with. Danks, referring to the grand jury's decision to decline indictment, said, quote, "This outcome is the justice system working. What really made the difference was the video. It gives a very clear look that this was an act of self-defense," end quote. After the jury returned the no true bill, the Commonwealth's prosecuting attorney, Larry Cleveland, said he was not particularly surprised by the outcome. He said he, quote, "felt that Mr. Bard could meet the requirements of the defense of others, but at the same time, a young man was killed and another young man was seriously injured, end quote. According to WLKY News, Bard had previously posted 10% of the $1 million bail, and upon the grand jury's decision, that money was actually refunded to him. Now, while Bard was completely cleared of all charges in Franklin County, Prosecutor Cleveland said at the time that the investigation into the shooting was not entirely over. He explained, quote, "There were many participants in this event. Some of those could still face criminal charges for the activity that they participated in that day," end quote. Following the announcement that the grand jury declined to indict Bard, KSU President Acapo said the decision did not lessen the pain that the campus community was feeling, and it did not change the university's priorities. In a statement, the president said, quote, "We want our campus community to know that the university is cooperating with law enforcement and investigators as appropriate, and we will continue to do so. Our focus is on care and accountability within the scope of our responsibilities as an institution. Our commitment remains centered on supporting our students and ensuring Kentucky State University is a safe place to learn, live, and work," end quote. But the story didn't end with the grand jury. According to the Lexington Herald Leader, the same day Bard was cleared, which was December 23, 2025, arrest warrants were issued in Indiana for Dajon Fox Jr.'s parents. 2 days later, on Christmas Day, both parents, Chardonnay Cleveland and Dajon Fox Sr., were arrested on intimidation charges. Prosecutors cited emotional social media posts calling for violent retaliation, including references to gang activity and threats toward Bard's family. But they were ultimately released on $1,500 cash bonds. However, for Dajon's father, those charges triggered something else. You see, at the time, he was already awaiting trial for a fatal 2024 crash in Indianapolis. According to news articles, police said Fox Sr. had been smoking marijuana and drinking alcohol before he crossed the center line and hit a scooter head-on. Y'all, the driver of the scooter, a guy named Tyler Hyde, sadly died at the scene. Anyway, after the intimidation charges were filed, his bond from that incident was obviously revoked. And on January 23rd, 2026, so less than 2 months ago from now, he accepted a plea deal and was sentenced to 14 years in prison. Not for the shooting that killed his son, obviously, but imprisoned nonetheless.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Before we end this episode, I want to slow us down for just a moment, because deadly protection, the title of this episode, is not a story that wraps itself up neatly. There is no clear villain. There is no ending that feels satisfying. And maybe that's the most honest part of this case, that two things can be true at the same time. I've learned there's a word for that. It's called duality. A father can genuinely believe he was protecting his child, and a 19-year-old student can still be dead because of that belief. A legal system can follow the law exactly as it's written, and families can still walk away feeling like justice never showed up for them. As someone who works in higher education, I can't hear this story without thinking about college campuses as places we promise are safe, or are mostly safe. They're places where families send their children believing they will be protected. Places meant for growth, learning, and possibility, not fear. But fear showed up here anyway, and when fear meets violence, the consequences don't just ripple outward, they collide into each other. I also keep coming back to the parents in this story. Every parent believed they were doing what they had to do for their child, and yet every parent lost something they will never get back. Cases like this force us to ask uncomfortable questions, questions that don't have easy answers. When fear takes over, who is allowed to act on it, and who is punished for reacting to it? But for those of us who work on college campuses, there's another question that sits quietly underneath all of it. What does prevention look like when intervention comes too late? Because this episode isn't just about a single moment of violence. It's about everything that happened before it, the reports, the threats, the earlier incidents, the warning signs that, in hindsight, felt impossible to ignore. I'm just really confused about what was happening on this campus for something like this to happen, 20 to 30 people in a mob. I don't understand. So on college campuses, we talk a lot about safety. We create policies, we form committees, we issue statements after tragedy. But real prevention means taking concerns seriously the first time they're raised. It means intervening early, communicating clearly, and making sure students and families never feel like violence is the only way to be heard or protected. Safety and accountability are not opposites. They are supposed to work together. When accountability breaks down, when patterns of harm go unchecked or concerns go unanswered, safety becomes fragile. And when safety feels fragile, fear has a way of filling that space, filling that gap. And when that happens, the consequences are never theoretical, they're personal. A young man loses his life. Families lose their future as they imagined it. And entire communities are left asking what could have been done differently. There are no winners in this story, only grief. Only lives permanently altered, only a long list of what-ifs that will never be answered. So, as you sit with this episode, I hope you remember Dejon Fox Jr. for who he was, not just for how he died. And I hope you think about campus safety not as a policy or a headline, but as a responsibility we all share. Because when prevention fails, the weight of that failure doesn't disappear when the case ends. Real people carry it with them forever. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox now. Thank you for sitting with this story today. Okay, y'all, that brings us to the end of Chronicle 109. As always, be sure to check out my social media where I post photos associated with each case and episode. You can find me at Campus Crime Chronicles on both Facebook and Instagram. Okay, well, that's all for today, so bye for now. Campus Crime Chronicles is researched, written, and recorded by me, Nicole Turner, and it's edited and produced by Giari Gassaway. Alexis McDonald is my research assistant, and Jillian Smith is my social media manager. Tune in again in 2 weeks for the next Chronicle.